You're listening to the WTA Insider Podcast. Ready? Play.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the WTA Insider Podcast. I'm Courtney Nguyen, senior writer for WTA Insider at WTATennis.com, and I'll be your host on this podcast, where we take you closer to the players and all the action on the WTA Tour. Well, on this episode, I'm coming to you from SW19, from Wimbledon. I'm actually in a small interview room here at the All England Club, and the draw took place earlier today on Friday at a really unfortunate early hour, at least for me, at 10 a.m. in the morning. But we now have hard draw ready for the ladies singles event at the championships, which begins on Monday. And it should be a doozy. And obviously, I will talk through all of this with my conversation partner and insider buddy, David Kane, who's coming to us from St. Petersburg, Florida. Hello, David.
Hi, Courtney. I think 10 a.m. London time is bad for you. You should only imagine what it was like for me. It was so bad that I didn't even wake up for it, but I'm glad to be taking out the draw right now.
I was about
now.
To say, I was like, I'm pretty sure you weren't awake there, friend.
It's almost 10 a.m. My time, so I am wide awake and bright-eyed for this exciting Wimbledon draw.
Well, we'll dive right into the Wimbledon draw. And obviously, Angelique Kerber, world number one, she sits atop the draw, a finalist here last year. She's the number one seed. Number two seed, Simona Halep, sitting at the bottom half of the draw. And we'll get into the number one ranking implications of this tournament in a little bit. But just to walk people through the draw to give everyone a sense as to where everybody landed. Number three seed Karolina Pliskova landed in the top half of the draw with Angelique Kerber, and number four seed Alina Svitolina landed in the bottom half of the draw. Now, there was a lot of intrigue in where the seeds from number 10 through number 14 would land. It's an interesting section of the seeds with Venus Williams seated at number 10, Petra Kvitova, number 11, Kristina Mladenovic, number 12, Yelena Ostapenko, number 13, and Garbiñe Muguruza at number 14. That's a pretty heady block of players. The only two Wimbledon champions in the draw are right there with Venus and Petra. Obviously, Kristina Mladenovic, one of the hottest players on tour at number 12. French Open champion, Yelena Ostapenko, she's at number 13. And Garbiñe Muguruza, a finalist here a couple years ago, she is at number 14. So it was interesting to see where those seeds would land. As it were, three of them, and an interesting combination of them, Venus, Petra, and Ostapenko, landed in the bottom half of the draw alongside Simona Halep, whereas Garbiñe Muguruza and Kristina Mladenovic landed in the top half of the draw. So just going very quickly, again, just quarter by quarter, projected quarterfinalists as the draw panned out: Angelique Kerber, potentially a quarterfinal against Svetlana Kuznetsova. Karolina Pliskova could potentially get Caroline Wozniacki, who's in the Eastbourne final this weekend. She'll play Karolina Pliskova. So an interesting little quarter there of two players who have had quite a few primetime run-ins already in the 2017 season. Down in the bottom half of the draw, we have number 8 seed Dominika Sabalenka, who's drawn into that quarter with Alina Svitolina. And then the bottom quarter was potentially Simona Halep and Johanna Konta. But of course, those quarterfinals, I don't know about you, David, they seem very far away. They seem definitely projected in a lot of ways, because there's a lot that can happen in the first week that's going to shape how it all turns out. But as we looked at this draw, other top seeds in the top half of the draw, in the Kerber half, we have Lucy Safarova, a potential third round opponent for Kerber. We also have Garbiñe Muguruza, obviously, up there as well. Agnieszka Radwanska, really struggling at the moment, but she's up there and opens against Jelena Jankovic in a kind of blockbuster throwback match there. Tamea Bachinski, number 19 seed, she's also in the top half, opens against a Monica Puig, very interestingly. Also, as I said, Kuznetsova, Pliskova, Daria Gavrilova, who's had a pretty good grass court season, showing some good form, she's in the top half. Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova, also up there. Mladenovic, as we mentioned. Coco Vandeweghe, a player who's absolutely dangerous on grass, she's there, as well as Daria Kasatkina, who has a few injury concerns as we head into the tournament. So just looking at the top half of the draw, David, you've had some time to kind of digest and take a look at it. What are the top line things that stood out to you?
You know, I think given the way this season has gone and given the way particularly Angelique Kerber's year has gone, I think that her quarter is always going to be looked at right now as something as a land of opportunity because of how up and down her year has been. She was a little bit better this week in Eastbourne, took a tough loss to Joe Conta on Thursday. So I think really one of the big winners of the draw would be number 14 seed and 2015 finalist Garbiñe Muguruza, who is at Wimbledon, I hear, this year with 1994 champion Conchita Martinez in lieu of regular coach Sam Sumic. They're supposed to reunite after Wimbledon, but in the meantime, Martinez will be here. That's an interesting combination. Obviously, Martinez knows how to win on grass, as does Muguruza as a former finalist. And Muguruza had a fairly consistent grass court swing, barring the tough loss to Strzitzeva earlier in the week and sort of a rain-affected mumbo jumbo happening at the Aegon International, but some solid form from Muguruza in Birmingham. So it would be interesting to see how she takes advantage or doesn't take advantage of this quarter. That first round between Radvanska and Yankovic is definitely an interesting one. That was a fourth round match here at Wimbledon a couple of years ago, and now it's a first round, in large part due to Yankovic's form, but obviously Radvanska hasn't had the greatest of years herself, so it'll be an interesting opportunity for her to perhaps turn her season around in a section with more of a clay court specialist, Tomeja Baczynski, although a former quarterfinalist here at the All England Club. And also for Svetlana Kuznetsova, a player who had some really good form last year at Wimbledon, making the second week. An interesting opportunity for Svetlana Kuznetsova, not necessarily known as a grass court player, but has made the fourth round, made the quarterfinals here in the past. Had a really good match against Karolina Pliskova on Thursday in Eastbourne, had a 4-1 lead over the Czech before she came back. So perhaps an opportunity for her to gain some points as well. It's an open first quarter. It's probably my main takeaway from this top half.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. And it's interesting that you highlight Garbiñe Muguruza as a potential opportunist in that quarter, because I circled that opening match. Garbiñe Muguruza opens up against Ekaterina Alexandrova. Alexandrova was down in Portsmouth, I believe, this week playing, and played a match against Laura Robson, played very well. And she is a player, a Russian, who really, really impressed me. She had Karolina Pliskova on the ropes at the French Open. Absolutely massive hitter. She could be really, really dangerous one as a first-round opponent there for Muguruza. Not going to let the Spaniard rally too much. Not that Muguruza really wants to do that on grass either. But I definitely circled that as a potential danger match and a kind of bracket-busting one. But overall, I think that you're absolutely right. It's a shame that Aga Radvanska comes into this tournament not in form, because this is a great opportunity for her. You know, she would have really, I think, been my favorite to make the semifinal, out of that quarter. Yeah. But you're right. She's sputtering just a little bit. And so it'll be very interesting to see who takes advantage of this section. And it could be Kerber, who did play, I think, markedly better in Eastbourne than maybe I had expected before.
No, for sure. Having to play two matches in one day, never easy. And going back to Alexandrova, obviously very talented player, certainly very on brand for 2017, a fearless big hitter in light of Yelena Ostapenko and Mirjana Lucic-Baroni earlier in the year. I guess the one positive in Muguruza's favor is she did have a very similar first round here at Wimbledon last year against Camilla Giorgi. Muguruza did get the better of the Italian there in sort of similar big hitting style. But conversely, the second quarter is very loaded. I mean, that I don't think you could find a tougher third round section than Mladenovic-Vandeweghe as a potential third round blockbuster, maybe perhaps the winner of which could find themselves in the semis.
Yeah, I was circling that as well. Coco Vandeweghe, 24th seed here, one of the most successful players on grass over the course of the last five seasons. And I think that's gone really under the radar. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that she does obviously play a full grass schedule, but just match wins wise, this has been the surface for her. And, has a new coach in tow with Pat Cash, as I guess the trend towards hiring super coaches and former champions is alive and well here at Wimbledon. But that, that it reminded me a little bit, that potential third rounder between Vandeweghe and Mladenovic reminded me a little bit of, if we flash back to the Australian Open, there was that big third rounder between Vandeweghe and Bouchard And I think a lot of us kind of thought, well, whoever wins that one could have a shot at making the semifinals, if not the finals. And sure enough, it was Vandeweghe who was able to eke that out, and she made the semifinals in Melbourne. So that'll be a very big one. And Mladenovic, I'm not going to say she's slumping, because I don't think that that's the case at all. But she definitely comes into this tournament not necessarily, you know, en fuego the way that she was, you know, maybe during the second half of the hard court season or during the clay season. So her grass court lead ups have been a little bit less noteworthy, I guess I should say. But you're right. It is a packed quarter there. I do like Pliskova getting through it. Again, we'll get a bit of a sense as to both where Pliskova and Wozniak are at maybe in the Eastbourne final, which is to take place on Saturday. But this is a tournament, the only tournament that Wozniacki, the only slam, I should say, where she has not progressed past the fourth round. So Wimbledon has always been a bit of a duck for her. Then again, Pliskova's never been past the second round. Now, Karolina Pliskova has shown throughout the course of the last, you know, 9 months that she's put those that second week slam duck well behind her, having been really the most consistent performer at the slams now, right?
Yeah. I mean,
she turned the corner real fast, did Pliskova. Didn't necessarily see it coming, but obviously breaking the duck at the U.S. Open to make the final, then doing it again to make the quarterfinals at the Australian Open, and then surprising everyone, including herself, somehow making the semifinals in Paris. And she picked up right where she left off. I mean, the most consistent player, really, on the WTA Tour is Karolina Pliskova. And, you know, you got to like her chances, not just of potentially winning the trophy here at Wimbledon, but also finishing at number one after Wimbledon, which, yeah, there are quite a few number one scenarios in play with five players potentially walking away from Wimbledon with the number one ranking. And those players are Angelique Kerber, Karolina Pliskova, Simona Halep, Alina Svitolina, and Caroline Wozniacki. So that Wozniacki might be the most surprising name to throw in there, given, you know, just the fact that, you know, the bulk of her points obviously coming, you know, from the U.S., obviously at the U.S. Open, and then on finishing the season very well and playing a pretty consistent first 6 months, you know, and did pretty well on the clay court seasons to get a good point grab at the French Open to put her in position here. A lot would have to go her way, as well as Alina Svitolina's way. But at least within Pliskova, Kerber, and Halep, those three players have a lot of the number one ranking kind of in their hands. And Pliskova is definitely in pole position to potentially take it.
Yeah, the thought of Wozniacki being number one again reminds me of that very popular GIF on Twitter, which ends with, "I bet you thought you'd seen the last of me." I won't mention what the first part of it is, but it certainly would be a surprise. Yeah, it'll be an interesting test for Pliskova, because I think what had been sort of her MO over the last few years was really strong performances in lead-up tournaments and then disappointing slam results. And this is really the first slam of hers in a while that she's had to play so close to a slam. And she's playing very good tennis in Eastbourne, had a tough match against Kuznetsova, gets the walkover into the final today because of Joe Konta's really unfortunate injury at the end of her quarterfinal win over Kerber. So won't have to play as much as she might have had to heading into Wimbledon. But it'll be interesting to see how she brings that momentum into a slam where she's been able to come into the French, Australian, and U.S. Open with at least a week's rest heading into that major. But overall, her section of the draw seems to be one that would go her way. I think it's a really interesting opportunity for Daria Gavrilova as well in the section with Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova, who made the quarterfinals here last year but is certainly more of a hard quarter, clay quarter player. So it'll be interesting to see how she falls. And it's also a little interesting section for Wozniacki, who might get Annette Kontaveit in the third round, if not Daria Kasatkina. Obviously, Kontaveit started the grass court season with her first title win in Den Bosch at the Ricoh Open. But yeah, I think all eyes are going to be on that Mladenovic-Vandeweghe section. I think, you know, Kiki has set the bar so high at the clay court season, reaching back-to-back finals, that it's hard to really replicate that. Definitely played a really good tiebreak against Petra Kvitova, who was really on fire in Birmingham. So it'll be interesting to see that. And also the return of Sloane Stephens, who'll be playing her first tournament of the season. Obviously, expectations won't be too high, given it's her first tournament, but did play Svetlana Kuznetsova to 8-6 in the third last year at the All England Club. So a lot of big big names, a lot of talent in that second quarter for sure.
Yeah, and just to go back to Wozniacki, as I just want to clarify, because it's breaking news, it's coming into my inbox as it is, that with Pliskova making the final in Eastbourne, now Wozniacki actually wouldn't have a chance to get that number one ranking at Wimbledon unless she wins the Eastbourne title. So a bit of a wrinkle there, but you know, things move fast and furious with the numbers here, especially in Eastbourne where, boy, the numbers were changing on an hourly basis given the number of back-to-back matches that those women had to play out there. So a lot on the line there on Saturday out on the coast in England. So a couple of other names that I just wanted to flag really quickly before we move on to the bottom half. Magdalena Rybakova is in this section of the draw.
Yes.
Watch out is all I'm going to say, just because. I mean, she's in this section with Karolina Pliskova, which is anchored with Zhang Shuai, where, you know, she could potentially be Pliskova's opponent in the second round. That is a match that I could potentially circle as being an upset alert. Also in this section, you have Lesia Cerenko and Yulia Gerges. Gerges, who played fantastic tennis to make the final in Mallorca. So if she can replicate that, it would be great. She's not a typical grass court player, but when you're confident and you're in form, sometimes that doesn't matter. So I think Gerges was a really hard luck loser at the French Open, picking up a flu before the tournament, losing in a tough three-setter in extra innings to Madison Brengel in the first round. It would be great to kind of see her get some redemption, I think much deserved redemption here at the All England Club. So that would be a very interesting one if she could make it through.
No, definitely. Yeah, Gerges played very well in Mallorca, had never made it past the fourth round of a grass court tournament, her best result being a round of 16 at the Olympics back in 2012. And those grass courts in Spain are definitely an interesting, definitely can yield some interesting results, with Anastasia Savastova making back-to-back finals, winning this year in a tough three-setter, one of the only players to really prove herself on all three surfaces heading into Wimbledon, as it yielded on our heat index. So definitely another one to watch as we preview the bottom half of the draw.
Most definitely. And also potential second-round match, and I know that you'll circle this one, David, Svetlana Peronkova against Caroline Wozniacki. That could be one that shifts things as well. So much intrigue in the early days in the first week at Wimbledon. But as we move down into the bottom half of the draw, as I said, led by Simona Halep and anchored alongside with Alina Svitolina, Dominika Sabolkova, and Johanna Konta, a number of players in this section. I mean, if I were to say, you know, if Angelique Kerber was the draw winner, I think that I would have to say that Simona Halep is the draw loser of this draw. Although on the whole, I think that things were spread out pretty fairly. But starting with the top quarter, which is anchored by Sabolkova and Svitolina, I think this is a section of opportunity. And the two players that you really circle as being the ones that can take advantage of this are Venus Williams, the number 10 seed, and Yelena Ostapenko, the number 13 seed. They're in that quarter. They would be right now for me the ones that I would tag to make it through and potentially face off in the quarterfinals as the higher seeds in that section, Svitolina and Sabolkova. They have some question marks coming into this tournament. Svitolina, she opens first of all against Ash Barty, which is one of the toughest unseeded draws that you could get in the first round. Ash Barty, who's played a fantastic grass court season, has only lost to Konta and Kvitova, made the final in Birmingham, scored her best wins in that tournament, beating Muguruza, beating Strzitzova. She's knocking on the door, the top 50, took Petra Kvitova to three sets, playing great tennis, former junior champion here. She opens against Svitolina. I think that that's definitely an upset alert match. Over to Sabolkova, just really struggling, you know. Ever since she hurt that wrist in advance of the Fed Cup and had to pull out of Stuttgart, and things just haven't really been breaking her way. And I spoke to Domi in Eastbourne after she lost a tough one against Heather Watson. It was a straight set match, but Sabolkova looked like she was coming back in that second set to force a third. And she said, you know, it's just a matter of confidence that the little points here and there, and she had match points against Lucy Safarova the week before in Birmingham in one of the best matches of the season. It's tough. Those points are just not falling her way is kind of her read on her season so far. She had a great tournament here last year. She opens against another veteran fan favorite who's struggling a little bit in Andrea Petkovic. It's just hard for me to see just right now Svitolina and Sabolkova. Svitolina also dealing with a foot injury about a week ago, said that she might not even play Wimbledon. Yeah. It's hard to see that those top two seeds have a lot of leg in them to make it through that first week.
Yeah, I think definitely with Sabalkova, at least, you could say that she might have a little bit of a leg up, to continue the pun, through at least her first two rounds. Pekovic never really comfortable on grass, and then would end up playing the winner of Jen Brady or Danka Kovanec. But then all things must come to an end in the third round, where she could either play Sabine Lisicki, potentially in what would be her second tournament of the season, or Anna Kanyu, who came very close to knocking out Aga Radvanska at this tournament last year, turning on her ankle in the middle of that third set, having ended up losing that match in three sets. Yeah, Barty is definitely, I think she heard my, she heard the
she
last
took
podcast
great issue.
And she is, she's taking great upbridge. She gave me a very stern lecture with her Birmingham form for sure. Playing very good tennis in singles and in doubles, was up a set, I believe, on Lavochkova Babos with Casey Delacqua, really one of the top doubles teams of the last few months. Definitely ones to look out for heading into potentially the WTA finals in Singapore. Reached three slam finals back in 2013 and wasn't able to qualify because of the four team limit. But that has all changed. Yeah, obviously with that Svitolina Lucic Baroni section, you could really see a Barty really potentially taking advantage of that, especially with Lucic Baroni's injuries and inconsistencies of late, with that shoulder injury really hampering her French Open campaign, and then has a potentially tough first round in Karina Vitoft, who's been playing some really good tennis over the last few weeks. So maybe could see her and Barty perhaps in the third round fighting for the second week. But yeah, I think Ostapenko and Venus are really the two stronger picks in this section. I think one of the bigger stumbling blocks for Venus could potentially be Barbora Strzitzova, who has been turning around her form in the last couple of days, playing some good tennis in Eastbourne, narrowly losing to Heather Watson in fading light on Thursday. That would be an interesting match. Venus has sometimes struggled against the sort of variety players. Peronkova would be one that I would think of immediately as one who can give her fits on grass. But Ostapenko played some really good tennis as well in Eastbourne, beating Carla Suarez Navarro and coming very close to beating Jo Konta yesterday on Thursday before falling in three sets. Would potentially play Madison Keys in the third round, an opportunity for Keys to really turn around her season after a lot of injuries. Definitely. I think either way, I think you're going to get a really good story coming out of this quarter, if not something that you would expect.
Most definitely. And Venus Williams opens up against Elise Mertens, who she played and beat handily on clay at the French Open, and then could face either Chiang Kai-shek or Wang Sheng in the second round. And then, yeah, potentially a Strzitzova, maybe a Naomi Osaka in that third round. So this is looking like a great section for Venus. Below her is Yelena Ostapenko in the section that's anchored, as David said, with Alina Svitolina. And yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, you and I were talking about it, David, and you said it, and I think that it's absolutely right that there hasn't been a first-time slam winner of late that maybe we collectively have as much confidence in terms of playing her next slam as Yelena Ostapenko. Why don't you explain that?
Yeah, I think of late we've seen, or at least in the last few years, I think even Francesca Schiavone explained it best when she won her French Open in 2010. You know, there's this idea of climbing the mountain, and then once you climb the mountain and reach the summit, you have to climb back down before you can climb back up again. And I think that's sort of been the case over the last few years, where you almost build in a 6 to 8 week window in which that maiden Grand Slam champion is going to have some time to really figure stuff out, not necessarily play her best tennis before rounding back into form. We saw that with Kerber in 2016. We also saw that with Muguruza in 2016, where it really did take them some time to rebound from this really career best triumph. And I know Simona Halep was asked about Ostapenko's chances this week in her All Access, and Simona was about as confident as you and I in saying that, you know, I don't think things are going to change too much for Ostapenko. She's going to continue to play her tennis. Things, you know, she's not really going to feel the same kind of pressure, because you didn't see her really grappling with too much pressure at the French Open. The way she won that title was really something to see. And the way she played her matches against Suarez, Navarro, and Konta were really no different than any other match you've seen from her in the last few weeks, and heading into a surface that should be beneficial to her. Still working with Anabel Medina Garrigues. They seem to have a really good relationship, and in a section of the draw that could be potentially really favorable for her. And so, overall, I think that Ostapenko is definitely as high up as she could possibly be, so close from her maiden Grand Slam victory.
One of the things that not amused me, but it's definitely different, is that Elena Ostapenko, 20 years old, just won a Grand Slam. You know, she's out there, you know, icing cupcakes for the kids in Eastbourne. She's practicing with the same players that she used to practice with, you know, I mean, she's playing with, you know, with the journey women players ostensibly, you know, out there just hitting balls and, you know, at some, one point had to play four to a court and she didn't look all that bothered with it. There is a groundedness about her that doesn't feel forced. This is just what she wants to do and how she wants to continue going on in her career. And you've seen instances where players get that big breakthrough, whether winning slams or not even winning slams, but having big results. And all of a sudden, you know, they're practicing alone on their practice court or they're, you know, making maybe more demands or things like that and kind of isolating themselves from everybody else. Understandably so. I mean, I think that, you know, if you look at the, you and I have talked about this, David, if you look at the top 10 in women's tennis all the time, it's typically players who have their own teams, who kind of do their own thing and don't really mingle too much. I mean, tennis is not their social life, you know? And that's still the case with Ostapenko in a way. I mean, she operates on a different plane, but to the extent that all of her training and the way that she's going about her business, it really didn't seem like it changed all that much once we got to Eastbourne. And I think that that's a great thing to see. And I think that that'll continue, you know, at Wimbledon, where she will have many eyes on her and she will continue to have that bemused look on her face as to why there are all these eyes on her. And it's incredibly refreshing. I mean, I can't talk about it without smiling, which you could probably hear. But, it just goes back to what Tomea Baczynski said. You know, she drinks pressure. She doesn't feel it. That's just what she does. And what you were referencing Simona Halep's comments during All Access Hour at Eastbourne, Simona summed it up perfectly, which is like, look, we know that she can't play the way that she played in Paris every single week. But she's not going to not play that way because of pressure. She's going to not, to the extent that she stumbles here at Wimbledon, if that were to be the case, it will be because she has a bad day or because she just, got flummoxed on that day. But it's not going to be because of she's carrying this pressure of being the French Open champion and people think that she should do it again here where she was a junior Wimbledon champion. It's not ever going to be the pressure that fells Yelena Ostapenko. And that's one of the biggest hurdles for so many players. And it just doesn't seem, as of right now, that it's one that she even has to clear.
No, for sure. I think it's just such an amazing dichotomy with Ostapenko as one who has really carved herself out a little interesting niche in the press room as being one who's sort of difficult to crack in terms of getting some really long, creative answers. She's really
she's
quick,
not chatty.
Direct. But at the same time, she's also very down. She's down to lol. I mean, she's doing these, you know, I mean, the iconic selfie challenge sticks out, the golf thing that she was doing in Indian Wells, you know, now doing cupcakes at Eastbourne. If you ask her to do something, she's more than likely to do it. And it's not a matter of going through a team or someone. There isn't an isolation process with her. I think she's very much the same player that she was coming into Paris. And so I think that's definitely what's going to help keep her grounded, that people are not treating her any differently. And if anything, they're asking her to do more of the things that she seemed to want to do in the first place, because there was never a sense that she didn't want to do any of these things. So I think, going into Wimbledon, if she does fall to potentially an in-form Alexandra Sosnovich, who's had a really good season, or even a Camilla Georgie later on in the tournament, you know, I think it'll just be because of, you know, the typical Ostapenko issues just with her game and consistency. It won't have anything to do with this sort of weight on her shoulders. In fact, what we saw that was so refreshing in Paris was the weightlessness and the fearlessness, and that's what makes her so fun to watch.
Most definitely. It just seems like there's no player I'd rather be right now than Yelena Ostapenko, because being Yelena Ostapenko looks really, really fun.
Yes.
But moving down to the quarter of the draw that is headlined by the women that Ostapenko beat in that French Open final, Simona Halep. So Halep and Konta headline this section of the draw. It's a quarter of the draw that includes Petra Kvitova. Also here, Victoria Azarenka, who's playing her second tournament back, having started her comeback from having her child Leo at the Mallorca Open, losing in the second round. But she opens against Cece Bellis in a draw that right up there with the Ash Barty, Alina Svitolina draw was definitely one that people kind of gasped at. The other seeds in this section, though. We have Roberta Vinci, Caroline Garcia, Kvitova, as I mentioned, Elena Vesnina, semifinalist here last year. She's here. Anastasia Sevastova, Mallorca Open champion, and Carla Suarez Navarro. Talk about this quarter of the draw, David. I mean, in a lot of ways, it does seem very open. It's potentially a quarter that is ripe with opportunity. I think the top quarter maybe was a little bit more difficult with Venus and Ostapenko floating around in there. But is this Halep's quarter to get through? Is this Petra's quarter to get through? Is this Konta's? What do you think? What do you think is, who's the headliner of this quarter?
I think if Petra plays the way that she played in Birmingham, given the draw that she has, I do think this is her quarter to win, especially given the new injury concerns that that Jo Konta might be taking into Wimbledon. Compound that with the pressure of playing at home, compound that with the fact that she has to play Sei Su Wei for the second straight Grand Slam first round, who beat her at the French Open in three kind of wacky sets. So that'll be an interesting one for sure. But I mean, if the way Petra was playing, the way she was serving, the way she was battling, I know she was talking to you really about the how important it was to her that she was able to get that three-set win, because she was playing so well in Birmingham, winning all these matches in straight sets, but then having to really fight back from a set down against Barty gave her so much confidence that coming into a section where she would open against clay court or Johanna Larsson and then play the winner of Rachel Hogenkamp and Madison Brengel, third round quarter being, you know, former Mallorca champion Caroline Garcia, who is always been pretty clear that the Mallorca grass and the Wimbledon grass are pretty different. And then, you know, either Konta or Vinci projected fourth round opponent. I think this would be a really, this is shaping up to be the Petra Kvitova Wimbledon movie that I think we all really wanted to see. And you're going to get a first row seat to it. And I'm really jealous, but yeah, I think that a lot of it's going to come down to that section. I think, yeah, that Azarenka Bellis first round is going to be very interesting. Cece Bell's doing a lot of firsts this year, playing her first. Was she playing her first red clay matches this year as well? I feel like she was also in the midst of that when she was beating Tomea Baczynski and Chabot, and then playing her first grass court tournament this year and getting some matches there as well, against an Azarenka who was up and down in Mallorca. A tough three-setter against Risa Ozaki, who really should have won that match, being 40 love up and that serving for the match on the resumption, and then really getting Anna Kanyud in the second round, winning just two games. You know, there's a lot of new, I think you, I'll certainly allow you to talk about this on your podcast, but about Victoria Azarenka, I just feel like there is a lot, I mean, for all the talk about, you know, comeback players and how we kind of expect or assume former champions to come back immediately and play their best tennis, I think there are a lot of variables with Azarenka right now. She's playing with a new coach. She's playing with a new racket. She's playing with a new serve action. It's a little bit different than what she was doing last year when she was working with Wim Fizette. She's got a new baby, if you forgot. And so I think there's going to be a lot of interesting things happening with her on a surface that's never necessarily been her favorite, particularly in coming back. I know she came back for the grass in 2014 and ended up losing a tough one to Bojana Jovanovski, but is a former semifinalist here and is a bronze medalist at the Olympics. And so definitely can play on grass, but it'll be interesting to see how she performs in what can be potentially a fairly open section, depending on how number 15 seed Elena Vesnina pulls up. Did take a tough loss to Caroline Wozniacki on Wednesday, was it? Yeah, Thursday? This week.
It's hard to keep track with all those random delays.
There were a lot happening, but she took a tough loss to Wozniacki in Eastbourne, although that was a little bit before that, Ekaterina Makarova did pull out of the doubles, and I suspect that perhaps that was a little bit of maybe Makarova and Vesnina trying to get out of Dodge. So perhaps that was the case heading into Wimbledon. So it'll be Vesnina could potentially play qualifier and former 2016 junior Wimbledon champion Anastasia Potapova in the first round. It is a match that I might just fly out to see. You might have to sneak me through the fence to watch that one. It is a match that I would, I am so excited about, and it might not even happen. But I don't think I could ever be more excited than right now, potentially getting to stream a Vesnina Potapova first round at Wimbledon. It would be be a lot of ayahs. Be a lot of ayahs. I could say a lot for of sure ayahs. In the first round.
Yeah, your excitement is palpable. I can through these electronic lines that we're talking through. But yes, I mean, it's a great opportunity there for all of these players. I mean, Azarenka, Bellis, there's a bunch of players, though, bunched up there in that section of the draw that is headlined by Halep and Vesnina with, obviously, Azarenka, Bellis. You also have Watson, who's obviously played very well this week in mm-hmm. Eastbourne. She's in there, and she opens against Zanevska. Also in there, Putintseva and Sevastova. Also is an opening round match. And then you go down a notch, and one that, you know, you definitely have to circle because we know what Eugenie Bouchard likes to do when she gets onto the bigger stages at the bigger tournaments. But Bouchard does open against Carla Suarez Navarro, the number 25 seed. And if that happens and she gets that win and gets on a roll, you never know with Jeannie. Also in that section, and again, this is now the Halep section, Vondrousova versus Pong. That's yeah. not an easy one. That's a good first round match to watch. And you also have Beatrice Haddad-Mia and Laura Robson in there. And, you know, who knows? I mean, the winner of Haddad-Mia and Robson could potentially play Simona Halep, who opens against a qualifier. A lot of different ways this section could break. I agree with you. This looks like a great draw for Petra Kvitova. Yeah. You know, and it's just a matter of seeing how she pulls up, how she handles the nerves, how her body is. I mean, there's still a lot of X factors there for Petra. And, you know, I feel bad almost yeah. expecting greatness from her or almost coming close to expecting the fairy tale to come true or come close to coming true. I mean, if she were to make a quarterfinal or semifinal, I think that that's massive in and of itself.
Yeah.
But it's also just what she was able to do in Birmingham and just the way she played. I mean, this is a more offensive Petra Kvitova that's come out, and it's necessarily had to be that way simply because she can't get herself caught in long rallies. She knows it. She needs that serve. She needs to shorten points. She's really going for her shots. And it was interesting in the conversation that I had with her for the Champions Corner. And I encourage everybody to listen to it from last week because there were a lot of little candid, you know, admissions from Petra. But one of the things that I appreciated her admitting was she said, look, in the beginning of my career, it was great. I played without pressure. Everything yeah. was new. And I was just slamming the ball. And then there came a point in my career where I thought too much. And I was thinking too much about my tennis and thinking about, you know, and it's true. There were times where almost with all of the offensive firepower that Petra Kvitova has, there was this segment of her career where it was almost like she was trying to play tennis too much. And you were like, stop playing tennis. Like, stop trying to rally. This is ridiculous. Like, you have the skill set to just blast the ball, hit incredible winners, get that first serve in. And she really started to overthink her game for a while there. Now, I think obviously because her left hand is still, you know, not at 100% strength, because she knows that maybe her match fitness, all these sorts of things are still, these pieces are still coming into place. She knows she has to be offensive. And the way that she finished that match against Ash Barty from 2-2, 40 love down with Barty serving, she absolutely started hammering the ball. Barty won 1 point for the rest of the match. And it wasn't because Ash Barty was missing the ball. It was because she was watching Petra Kvitova paint the lines and chalk was flying up everywhere. I mean, she made center court out there look like a rain cloud. It was amazing. and that's what Petra Kvitova can do. We've known that we know she can obviously do it here at Wimbledon. 2011 champion, 2014 champion, 3 years on. Will she repeat the pattern? And will it be 2017 champion? We will see.
I really enjoyed the Petra Kvitova explanation of sort of her evolution as a player. And it's something that a lot of players have struggled with, this sort of expectation to play differently. And it's something that I don't know that you have to necessarily go through in any other sport. It's something, the most concrete comparison I can draw would be to my experience watching the reality TV show RuPaul's Drag Race, in which there is this expectation on the contestant to show versatility, that the style of performance, the way that they present their drag persona, they need to present some kind of vulnerability, or they need to be different. If their specialty is comedy, they have to show glamour. If they're glamour, they have to show they can be entertaining. And so with Petra Kvitova, it's sort of a ridiculous expectation to see the way she hits the ball and say, yes, but can you play tactical tennis? Or similar with what Jelena Jankovic and what Caroline Wozniak have gone through over the years. They've shown themselves to be tremendous defensive counterpunchers, grinders, and then to watch them win all those matches and say, yes, but can you hit winners? And so, but there's this idea at the end of the day where if you are playing the way you play, and it is your native style, and it's how you win your matches. Why should you change? You know, it's if anything, you improve the way you're already playing to become a better version of yourself rather than prove yourself to be the sort of jack of all trades. And I think, again, what we've seen so refreshing from Elena Ostapenko is this shift towards just being a better version of herself, being a more consistent version of herself, similar to Karolina Pliskova. I don't think we've seen her become a better necessarily rallier or a defender. I think she's just become a more consistent version of the player that we already knew her to be. And I think that's what's been so great about this season. We've seen these big hitters come on and just get better and not feel the pressure to be different and or to deviate from their style and play the right way, but losing matches, playing the right way. They're playing the way they're going to play, win or lose, and more often than not, they're winning. And so I think hopefully we see more of that on a surface that does demand you to kind of really put up or shut up, especially the way the conditions are on grass. So either way, I'm looking forward to it. I'll be there every day from afar, taking all of it in.
I absolutely love everything that you said there. Say it louder for the people in the back. and the player that you mentioned that it really came to mind is Karolina Pliskova. Yeah. You know, I mean, here's a player who is adamant. I mean, just no nonsense about, yeah, I'm never going to be a track athlete. You know, like, don't make me run. Like, my ability to win long rallies, okay, that'd be nice. But who cares? If I win all the rallies that are shorter than four shots, I don't get more points if the rallies are longer. You know, I mean, yeah. Like, a point is a point. And however you choose to win it is how you choose to win it. And I think even back to, like, a Sam Stosur who always, you know, everybody would always talk about her backhand. And you got to improve the backhand. You got to improve the backhand. And she always just said, look, I mean, I'm a big believer in you back your strengths. Mm-hmm. You improve your strengths, you hone your strengths, and you work to protect your weaknesses. But I don't need a backhand. I mean, and I say that as, and you know, she went on to win a Grand Slam, play in multiple Grand Slam finals. I mean, no one will begrudge the career that Sam Stosur had.
No.
You're right. I mean, this idea that somehow these players are supposed to be all around great tennis players, you know, they could hit every single shot in the book. It's not necessarily true. And at the end of the day, evolution happens because it has to happen, not because it's a choice. You don't choose to evolve. You know, I mean, it's like, no, I have to fix this. And so for certain players, they have had to fix things. You know, I think that, you know, if I look at a Kerber, for example, I think a big reason that she was able to, you know, make that breakthrough in 2016 was because she did become more aggressive. She did start slapping that forehand, and that did make a difference. But, you know, do all players need to just choose to, I just want to try and hit a bigger ball? Probably not. And you saw with the Yelena Yankovic is a good example of a player who, you know, got to number one, was a consistent winner, and started to try and change her game a little bit to be stronger, to be, and then she said, like, I'm so slow, you know, like she started to put on more muscle and she started to try and be stronger. And she said it completely ruined her game and she didn't need to do it. You know, and obviously that's a very fine balance of wanting to improve your game versus change it. But I think with the offensive players in particular, you're absolutely right. I mean, do what you do best, just do it more often than not.
Yeah.
And you know, you have yourselves the secret of a successful career.
And that's a wrap on this episode of the WTA Insider Podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, or on any podcast app of your choice to ensure you never miss an episode when they go live. Reviews are always helpful, so if you like what you've heard so far, please do leave us one. And you can get new episode alerts by following us on Twitter at WTA_insider, and we'll of course post the podcast on the WTA website at WTATennis.com. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.